For he's always glad when everything's bad, cause then his collections are good, 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 good. His nose knows no pathway of roses, no flowers that bloom in the spring. For it's catch as catch can for the scavenger man. Posterity, where is thy... All right, we're done.
That was so good, man.
Exactly.
Hey there, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9. We're here in Las Vegas, Nevada at Dev Intersection. I'm here with Jay Schmelzer. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good.
Did I say it right?
Close enough.
What, do you tell me how I'm supposed to say it?
Schmelzer.
Schmelzer. We go way back. We used to do a lot of trips, you know, to Antarctica together. To visit the penguins.
Yeah, penguins.
So what are you working on now, bud?
I'm still the PM lead for the .NET team.
Okay.
Runtime framework and languages.
So you say that really softly and nicely, but it turns out that there's some super interesting stuff happening with .NET. Like stuff that like a couple of years ago, people would have fallen out of their chairs kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm maybe a little, been doing it for a little while, so.
Sure.
And trying to be a little
nonchalant
about it. But yeah, I mean, I think certainly when I got here a number of years ago, I would not have thought that, you know, we'd be open sourcing .NET, that we'd be building it for cross-platform use to target, you know, Linux, run on Mac, and partnering with companies to make it run on iOS and Android. So yeah, it's some pretty impactful stuff going on.
So .NET Core, let's talk about that, because I think there's a little confusion. There used to be all these client profile thingies that I'm still trying to understand today. Let's get into what's happening now with sort of the full 4.6 and then the .NET Core. What's the main difference?
Yeah, well, so fortunately, you know, a nice thing about technology is that when you feel like you haven't been able to quite figure things out, some of them you can just not worry about because they go away.
Yeah, they're gone. Right?
And so the client profile thing is one of those where I really think of it as, we typically refer to it as .NET 2015, and it really is made up of two primary flavors of .NET. There's what I call the full framework, so 4.x, 4.6, the current one in release. That's the framework we've all grown up with.
Sure.
It's predominantly one package, contains everything you need, whether you're building a desktop app or a web service.
Sure.
.NET Core is a modern re-envisioning of the framework. Better layering, better design, targeting the kinds of applications people are building today. So allowing you to have a slim runtime, pull in just the framework libraries that your application needs, deploy it all right next to the application and with the application, if that's what you want to do. So you know that with confidence, what you developed against, what you tested with, and what you initially put into production is going to be what's there until you change it. No application will affect you.
So I'm going to dumb this down a little bit for my sake, of course. It's almost like all of .NET, if you're using .NET Core, is another assembly you put in the bin folder.
Kind of, yeah.
And so an example is, say you build an application that worked on .NET Core 1, which comes out sometime later, and your stuff just works. You can keep redeploying with that same one.
Yep.
And if you want to upgrade and you're like, all right, let's try to upgrade, and it doesn't work, you're like, well, let's just stay with that one.
Yep.
There.
Yep. And if somebody else comes along with, you know, .NET Core 2 and an app that's going to be deployed to the same set of machines, that won't affect your application. You're still hanging out on .NET 1.
Absolutely. So the other thing about .NET Core is that it works on Linux and a Mac.
Correct.
It feels like there had to be some kind of fun engineering, because I mean, when you're doing file I/O, it's different.
Yeah, so there's a platform abstraction layer down in the runtime and some of the framework layers that handles the OS specific aspects of the environment you're running on. But at the programming interface level, at the API level, where we would program and build applications on top of, it's consistent across those. So I was talking about earlier today in a session, and someone was kind of asking me, so I'm confused. If I'm on a Mac and I build, how's that going to run on a Linux machine? I'm like, well, think about it as what you built is an assembly that will run on and bind to the runtime implementation on the platform you went. So you built it on the Mac, running against the Mac layer, copy that assembly over to a Linux machine that has the Linux install of .NET Core, and it's now running on a Linux implementation of the runtime. But to your application, it looks like the same thing.
So let's talk a little bit about, because there was something similar to that earlier, what relationship does it have with it? And obviously we're talking about Mono.
Yep.
Similarities, differences, is it just a new implementation? I know Mono is now going to Core CLR as well.
So I think of Mono a lot as the cross-platform counterpart of the full framework, right? So you have the full framework, the 4.x framework that we ship that is a Windows-only implementation. Mono would provide you a Linux or Mac implementation of that surface area.
Oh, the full thing.
And then .NET Core is the reimagined, redesigned subset of that that we're providing across everything.
Awesome. So let's talk about what that subset is. What is it that in Core CLR, or what's in the full framework that's not in Core CLR and vice versa?
I would say the best way to think about it is we started with the more modern application layers targeting at server workloads. So thinking about the ASP.NET stack,
sure.
MVC, there. Web forms, not there
right.
today. Same thing for other service layer stacks. That's the way we're targeting the initial release. Sure. We've been working with a number of customers trying to figure out good ways to provide a migration path from existing to new. Turns out that there are a lot of ASP.NET applications out there that it started 10 years ago and have carried with them every bit of the latest technology along the way, right?
Sure.
So giving people a way to migrate, that's also why you see ASP.NET 5 being able to run on .NET 4.6 as well as
right.
.NET Core, so to aid in that migration.
Awesome. So we talked about Core CLR a little bit. I think another more interesting news is that it was open source, or parts of it were. What parts of it was open source? Is it all of it, some of it?
The entire .NET Core stack is open source on GitHub. So I think it was a couple months ago, like March timeframe of this year, we hit the milestone where in the GitHub repos, you had the runtime, the base class libraries, the ASP.NET web stack, the entity framework stack, SignalR, the compilers were all on GitHub. The whole stack was there, open source, all of it taking contributions.
It feels like we're like giving out the goods, man. Why the change of heart?
That's just the way people build application programming stacks today. I mean, that's the reality. We wanted to make sure we were being and acting the same way as the rest of the application stacks we compete with. It's also just the way a whole set of developers want to work. They want to be able to get in, get involved, get engaged in this. And for me, that's awesome because I really increase the number of engineers that are working on and contributing to the product.
And you are taking contributions and you have taken pull requests and it is forming part of the Core CLR.
Yeah, I would, it's hard to get specific numbers on this because everybody has fun with their GitHub IDs, right? It's hard to map them around sometimes, but we estimate that somewhere in the neighborhood of about 10% of the commits that have gone in have come from outside Microsoft engineers, so people that are not Microsoft employees.
Right.
And some of them, a lot of them, are quite significant. A good percentage, probably 60% of that platform abstraction layer for Mac was contributed by somebody that's not a Microsoft employee.
So if you're a business owner and you're thinking, oh my goodness, Microsoft isn't writing this, I should be scared, what do you say to them?
So essentially what we did here is all we did was moved the code repository to a location that's publicly accessible and allowed people to contribute to it. Everything from the standpoint, from that part of a pull request coming in to being reviewed, committed, verified, tested, and that's all the same. Every pull request goes through the same code review process, whether it's a Microsoft person or not. The tests are all the same. The test verification is all the same. All of the compliance checking we do, that's all exactly the same as we've done before, regardless of whose code it is that came through.
So literally, you've an open source community, let's say she wanted to start working on a part of the Core CLR because localization was weird for wherever she lives. Literally, it's almost as if she's an employee from pull request on.
Yep.
Exactly. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's interesting. We've seen a couple trends start to emerge in the repos. Like early on, you saw people that were contributing, and I would say it was fairly obvious their motivation was I want to be able to say I have code in the framework, right? Which is great. But we've also started seeing another class of people that are trying to just learn to be better developers because they realize their code is going to get reviewed by the senior engineers on the runtime team,
right?
Like, oh my God, I just got feedback from Stephen Tobe or Jan Kodas, right? Who are serious, extremely experienced engineers in their space, and it's like wow. And you see that in the feedback. They're like, wow, this is great. I'm becoming a better developer, which I think is I didn't actually anticipate that would happen.
Right.
I think it's cool.
And then there's probably another class where there's some significant contributions where we're thinking as a Microsoft company, wow, we should have thought of this. I'm glad you did. Let's put it in.
Yep. Yeah, there certainly are. A lot of the way we try to govern the project is, you know, we try to be very open and transparent about the designs, the direction we're trying to go, the roadmap, and those kinds of things. We're also trying to explore ways to help people engage. So when, you know, the developer decides she wants to engage, we've started playing with tagging in the issued and work item area, where we call it up for grabs.
Yeah.
Which basically says, we want this in the release. We don't know of anybody working on it right now. So if you're looking for someone to do, grab one of those, right? Take it and start working on it, and you don't have to worry that, oh, is someone gonna put a pull request in 30 minutes before I did, and yeah, all my work is for naught.
Right? Is there a lot of those?
There's quite a few. I don't know off the top of my head the actual number,
but of course.
There's quite a few.
So let's get into the whole, because you talked about governance a little bit. Tell us about the governance of, because when you go to Microsoft on GitHub, there's tons of stuff. How is this all governed?
So there's a couple aspects to it. When we talk about .NET things, and specifically the .NET Foundation, the .NET Foundation is got a unique characteristic that, unlike some other open source foundations, the .NET Foundation is not trying to control every project that's part of the foundation. The only thing that we really get involved in, or that we actually get involved in, for the most part, is the licensing, right? We want to make sure that you're using a license that is friendly to both commercial and non-commercial use.
Sure.
The direction of your project, that's owned by the project owner. So in the case of the CoreCLR, CoreFX, that's owned by the Microsoft project team. We, of course, do designs and conversations as open and transparent as we can, and want good conversations back and forth. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, the Microsoft employee that's responsible, you know, for that project, that's going to make the final call on whether we do something.
Right. So that's interesting. So you mentioned other projects. Can you say I have an open source project and I want to be in the .NET Foundation? What's the process for going through that if you do want to do that?
Yeah. So the process would be you go to the .NET Foundation's website, .NETFoundation.org, and essentially there's a link there. You can say, hey, I've got a project I'm interested in bringing. And the executive director of the .NET Foundation, Martin Woodward, would probably be the first person that would contact you, learn more about your project, and then depending on the state of that project, whether it's a thing that's been out there for a while and you're just looking to get it associated with .NET and get better visibility to it, or if it's just a brand new idea and you're not sure how to get started, Martin will help you through that process. Probably if it's a newer project, we have an advisory council, which are made up of a number of experienced open source people, and they'll assign someone will kind of become a buddy and help you through kind of that onboarding process.
So the .NET Foundation is not just to manage the legal aspect, which is something that if I want to do open source, I just want to throw some code out there, and if it's useful, that's great.
Yeah.
But they also help with mentoring. Like, for example, they might help me understand what?
Well, I mean, it could be everything from what license should I use, what model should I use for actually controlling the direction of the project,
sure,
right? What are the options out there? How do we get people to contribute into this project? How do you get visibility to it? How do you, you know, those kinds of things are the obvious ones that people do. There's some other ones that tend to happen because of the closeness between the foundation and Microsoft, is that when we see engineering teams inside of Microsoft struggling with something and we see a project in the open source that's addressing it, we actively try to buddy them up and say, hey, you're probably interested in what these folks are doing over here in this project, right?
I see.
And have them start a dialogue and conversation. And then tend to happen is you'll see that some Microsoft engineers will start expressing interest in contributing to that project. And now you get to do more faster than you had before.
That's interesting. And I see that in a lot of the tooling, for example, we're doing even today, because in ASP.NET, for example, the vNext, we could have written our own task runner, for example, but there already was something. We could have written our own client-side package manager, but there already is NPM, right?
I mean,
and so I feel like Microsoft's moving more towards, let's just get good code to everyone.
Yeah, I think it's certainly a big push, right? And I would say that there have each head of the big divisions out of Microsoft engineering division sent out some flavor of a mail a while ago to the teams. The most direct one essentially said, you better go see if someone solved that problem before you start writing code yourself.
The not invented here syndrome. There's like a mandate against that now.
Exactly. I mean,
awesome.
I won't throw anybody in the bus, but there's certain parts of the products, of every product, where there's multiple implementations of the same thing, right? Because, well, not invented here, or I got a better idea, and I'm going to do it differently. And now it's sort of been the opposite of like, that's really, you got to really be able to articulate why the thing that's there isn't going to work for you.
Right. Makes sense. So you talked about the .NET Foundation having some other projects. How many projects are they working with? I mean, I know I'm asking you to spitball here a little, because obviously you don't.
Yeah, I would say it's probably in the neighborhood of 25 to 35,
which is a lot.
Which is not bad for a still young foundation.
Sure.
I'd say there's probably 3 to 5 active in the pipeline at any time. So
that's awesome. So what did you talk about here at Dev Intersections? Same kind of stuff?
Yeah. The main topic at Dev Intersections was around introducing the idea of a cross-platform .NET to existing .NET developers.
What's the reaction? It's got to be interesting.
It's interesting. I would say that the folks I had in the room, nobody was doing it.
Right.
And which makes sense. We haven't shipped it yet.
Sure.
And we haven't even shipped a release candidate of it yet. A lot of them were curious about it. So I took an approach where I started from the existing tool set. And actually, my first demo really was in Visual Studio on Windows,
sure,
building an ASP.NET 5 app, and then deploying it to Linux. And then we kind of went from there to the opposite of like, okay, now let's go hang out on a Mac and
sure,
do it totally different. So I think that the message we were trying to get across was, as a .NET developer, as a C# developer, we've just expanded the range of where your skill set can apply, right? You can start targeting numerous new scenarios, platforms, environments, and just kind of really increase your value to whatever organization you're working in. So,
well, this is awesome. Where can people go to find out more? And maybe if they want to contribute, how can they do that?
They want to contribute. The best place to go is on the GitHub repo. So go to the kind of the .NET main repo, and you can find the CoreFX, CoreCLR, and even our kind of experimental repos there. It's a great place to just go, and whether you want to start contributing or just kind of hang out and get a sense for what the conversations are. The .NET team's blog is a great place to see what's happening. The team hasn't been publishing as frequently as they normally do, and that's usually a sign that some interesting stuff's about to come, because we're all pretty heads down getting some things done. Those are the main places I would
awesome,
point people to.
Well, Jay, thanks so much for spending some time with us, bud.
Always good to see you.
Hey, we're at Las Vegas for Dev Intersections. Thanks for watching, and we will see you next time. Take care.